Thanks for being here on the Saturday morning. The talk that I'm giving, if you see on your handout, is titled, You Are the Problem. As Dave said, very aggressive. This actually comes from the series I'm doing on the Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Very, like, seminal text in Zen. Often the first people actually who are Zen practitioners do not read, and so I think it's useful to visit whether you're obviously a beginner or just have beginner's mind practicing for some time. Really interesting to revisit and see what it brings up. So this chapter is called To Polish the Tile. You might have heard of it, very talked about infamous koan that we often talk about here, but it's also about another koan. So really like analyzing and talking about two koans and also having problems. So we'll get to that part. All right, so Sunri Suzuki begins. When you go to a zendo and sit, you may think you are doing some special thing. While your husband or wife is sleeping, you are practicing zazen. You are doing some special thing and your spouse is lazy. That may be your understanding of zazen. But look at the frog. A frog also sits like us, but he has no idea of zazen. Watch him. If something annoys him, he will make a face. If something comes along to eat, he will snap it up and eat, and he eats sitting. Actually, that is our zazen, not any special thing. So when I first read this part of the chapter, I love this passage. I've referred to it many times, but I feel like it's very, very relatable. The like practicing zazen while someone else isn't, feeling like superior / resentful of them is very relatable, I think. Even just, I think, being someone who is in some way practicing Buddhism or meditator moving to the world, I think it's very easy to fall into that, oh, well, maybe you should be a Buddhist then. Just towards anyone acting in a way that you feel like you're not. So I love this thing, but this idea, oh, that zazen's like this frog and it's not any special thing. I was like, you know what? Because I knew this was going to be about polishing the tile. It's like, maybe I shouldn't even include this. I feel like every time we do a talk, Sunri Suzuki says, this is not any special thing. Zazen is not any special thing. Zazen is not any special thing. So I like was thinking, oh, maybe I won't even include this, which is a very good example of not having beginner's mind. Because I was like, oh, I know this part already. I know zazen's not the special thing. We've heard that 1,000 times. Well, if he keeps repeating it, maybe it's something that we should keep hearing, keep listening to. Zazen is not the special thing. And also the metaphor, which I didn't remember, of the husband and wife sleeping comes up again and again, or the example of it, of the of feeling superior to that, feeling disconnected from that, above that thing. So this motif that comes up again and again that he keeps referencing, and he also talks about having a problem, like practicing with a problem. And so it almost seems like one interpretation of this, like that you could have, is that the example of the problem that he's giving is you're doing zazen and someone else is not. So just moving forward, something to consider. So he goes on to say, here's a kind of frog koan for you. Basa was a famous Zen master called the Horse Master. He was the disciple of Nengaku, one of the 6 patriarch's disciples. One day while he was studying under Nengaku, Basa was sitting practicing zazen. He was a man of large physical build. When he talked, his tongue reached his nose, his voice was loud, and his zazen must have been very good. Nengaku saw him sitting like a great mountain or like a frog. Nengaku asked, what are you doing? I am practicing zazen. I guess I would say, I am practicing zazen, if I'm really trying to be this guy. Basa replied, why are you practicing zazen? I want to attain enlightenment. I want to be a Buddha, the disciple said. Do you know what the teacher did? He picked up a tile and he started to polish it. In Japan, after taking a tile from the kiln, we polish it to give it a beautiful finish. So Nengaku picked up a tile and started to polish it. Basu, his disciple, asked, what are you doing? I want to make this tile into a jewel, Nengaku said. How is it possible to make a tile a jewel? Basso asked. How is it possible to become a Buddha by practicing Zazen? Nengaku replied. Do you want to attain Buddhahood? There is no Buddhahood besides your ordinary mind. When a cart does not go, which do you whip, the cart or the horse? The master asked. So a very deep koan that people have written entire books about, and we're just going to talk about in a short Dharma talk in addition to another koan. So there's a lot there. There's a lot to think about. What follows is Shunri Suzuki and also Dogen's interpretation of what this koan means. But I just want to bring a little bit of koan night into Saturday morning. Also, any interpretation is valid, and your interpretation, if it's different than Shunri Suzuki and Dogen, I think is valid, very valid as well. So Shunri Suzuki goes on to say, Nengaku's meaning here is that whatever you do, that is Zazen. True Zazen is beyond being in bed or sitting in the Zendo. If your husband or wife is in bed, that is Zazen. If you think, I am sitting here and my spouse is in bed, then even though you are sitting here in the cross-legged position, that is not true Zazen. You should be like a frog always. That is true Zazen. So this idea that your Zazen is separate from the other people in the world not doing Zazen, that there is, that you're sitting here doing Zazen and someone else is sitting somewhere else not doing Zazen, is wrong, according to Shunri Suzuki. And that when you're doing Zazen, everything is doing Zazen, which is something he's taking from Dogen when he talks about, like, when you have the perfect, it's my goal in life to memorize this number that he gave in his writing, and I haven't memorized it. But it's something like 3 billionth of a second of perfect meditation, the entire world meditates with you. The entire world is doing Zazen with you, which is a reassuring thing, right? Like, you're sitting in Zazen and your mind is wandering and you're bringing it back. You're thinking about what you are doing later today and you're bringing it back. You're thinking about your worries and your concerns and you're bringing it back. And it sometimes feels, at least for me, I can only speak for myself, I'm only in my head, like, am I doing Zazen at all? But according to Dogen, just a millisecond of a millisecond of doing Zazen is, the entire world does Zazen with you. So somehow in that, pulling yourself back to the moment, getting distracted again, pulling yourself back to the moment, there must be like a billionth of a second of perfect Zazen in there. There must be more than one of those. And the entire world is doing Zazen with you. So you can rest assured, you've sat Zazen, you've done perfect Zazen, according to Dogen. But I think it also is good to remember to be the frog and to return to being the frog, to just sit, to just do Zazen, to not feel like your Zazen is any special thing. And that is something, even though we do Zazen perfectly in 1 billionth of a millisecond, maybe we can aim for like 2 billionth and 3 billionth and 4 billionth, and practicing like the frog will help us get there. So Dogen Zenji commented on this koan. He said, when the horse master becomes the horse master, Zen becomes Zen. When Basso becomes Basso, his Zazen becomes true Zazen, and Zen becomes Zen. What is true Zazen? When you become you. When you are not you, then no matter what you do, that is Zazen. Even though you are in bed, you may not be you most of the time. Even though you are sitting in the Zendo, I wonder whether you are you in the truest sense. It's interesting that Shunri Suzuki uses you. Just as someone who's been practicing a while, it's, you often hear that. And Shunri Suzuki says that a lot. You becoming you is Zazen. You becoming you. But we're taught that there's no self. That's one of the basic things of Buddhism, is that there's no self. So what is you? What is this you that he's talking about? How am I supposed to think of myself as a you? And you becoming me, sorry, and me becoming more me, and also the concept of no self, how am I supposed to carry those both? I think the next koan that he references answers that question to some extent. At least, I think it does. So here's another famous koan. Zuken was a Zen master who always used to address himself. Zuken, he would call. And then he would answer, yes. Zuken, yes. Of course, he was living all alone in his small Zendo. And of course, he knew who he was. But sometimes he lost himself. And whenever he lost himself, he would address himself. Zuken? Yes. If we are like a frog, we are always ourselves. But even a frog sometimes loses himself, and he makes a sour face. And if something comes along, he will snap at it and eat it. So I think a frog is always addressing himself, and I think that you should do that also. Even in Zazen, you will lose yourself. When you become sleepy, or when your mind starts to wander, you lose yourself. When your legs become painful, why are my legs so painful? I've done that. You lose yourself. Because you lose yourself, your problem will be a problem for you. If you do not lose yourself, that even though you have difficulty, there will actually be no problem whatsoever. You just sit in the midst of the problem. When you are a part of the problem, or when the problem is a part of you, there is no problem because you are the problem itself. The problem is you yourself. If this is so, there is no problem. So you are the problem. So you are the problem is actually like an inspirational mantra that you could repeat to yourself to, you know, pump yourself up. You are the problem. You are the problem. You are the problem. I'm the problem. So if you want to humor me, you also don't have to humor me and you can just not do this. But if you could all take just a moment and sit in Zazen and address ourselves, just say our name and then yes. And actually, when we feel like we've lost ourselves, say yes, just in our heads. You also don't have to do this at all, but I think it might be fun to try it just for a few moments. So your name and yes, your name and yes. Just try to address yourself like the frog and like Zukan. All right. I just did that because I wanted to. Actually, when I started to do that, my foot started to hurt. So like really intensely. And so I was like, Emily, yes, Emily, yes, Emily, yes, Emily, yes, Emily, yes. I don't know if that brought anything up for you or gave anything to you doing that. I think for me, how I can reconcile this koan and what Shun Rizuki is saying about true Zazen is you becoming you is not self is about the impermanent self. It's about recognizing that yourself, which is so hard to recognize, even though intellectually I've heard it so many times, but you yourself is constantly changing, is constantly impermanent, is constantly arising and passing away. It's not permanent at all. This thing that I call Emily, that I feel the permanence of, and whose permanence of makes me suffer so much in so many ways, because if Emily is this permanent thing, then so many things can be done to her and she can be offended and insulted and have so many problems and have so many issues, and she can want things that she doesn't get, and like this whole sense of she can get things and then that those things go away, this whole sense of being this permanent being, this permanent self, I think causes so much suffering. But if it's this constant Emily, yes, Emily, yes, Emily, yes, then what do we have to lose? What do we have to give away? There's nothing that we can need to hold on to or grasp onto. There's nothing that we've lost because we're constantly losing ourselves. So you are the problem. This problem of my foot hurting is me. And if I just sit in it, if you just sit in the midst of this problem, when you are part of the problem, the problem's a part of you, there's no problem because you're the problem. It's really a beautiful way of thinking about problems. And so imagine, if you will, having a problem. It's very hard for some of us to imagine this, but imagine having a problem, and imagine if we could just sit in the midst of this problem, become this problem somehow, recognize this problem as us and recognize that there's no problem. That would be nice. It goes on to say, when your life is always part of your surroundings, in other words, when you are called back to yourself in the present moment, then there is no problem. When you start to wander about in some delusion, which is something apart from yourself, then your surroundings are not real anymore, and your mind is not real anymore. Most people live in delusion, involved in their problem, trying to solve their problem. But just to live actually is to live in problems, and to solve the problem is to be a part of it, to be one with it. So what he means with this, you, yourself, you are the problem, and then there's no problem. So when light, your life is always a part of your surroundings, when you are called back to yourself in the present moment, then there is no problem. The only problem is when your life is not a part of your surroundings, when you're not called back to yourself in the present moment, when you wander about in some delusion which is apart from you yourself. And I think he also means this impermanent you that is keep arising and passing away, like this you that isn't permanent, this you that isn't solid. When you see yourself apart from that, then you have a problem. I really connect with this line of most people live in delusion, involved in their problem, trying to solve their problem. That's delusion. But just to live is actually to live in problems. I think it's very easy for a lot of us when we have a problem to think, why me? Why me? As if there's some world in which, or version of our lives in which there are no problems. Some person that exists that's walking through life without any problems. And I think it's really interesting that the founder of this practice of Buddhism was a prince with everything he could ask for, supposedly with no problems, who saw sickness, old age, and death, and then realized that even princes have problems, that everyone has problems. But yet we think there's a version of us, there's a version of our lives problem-free, and we suffer because of that. And we try to solve our problem because we think there's a world in which our problems can be solved. And Shun Suzuki is saying, to live is actually to live in problems. And to solve the problem, to truly solve the problem, he's saying, is to be a part of it, to be one with the problem. There's a lot of problem solving that I do that is not that, that is resisting the problem, that's saying, this problem shouldn't exist. Why is this problem here? This is unfair, or I hate this problem, or other people don't have this problem. It's everything that is not being part of it. It's everything that's trying to be separate from it. This problem is not me. This problem is something else. This problem is outside of me. Why is this happening to me, the permanent Emily? Why is this happening to me, as opposed to this problem that you just live in, this problem that you can just truly be a part of, that you accept, I guess, as something that is just part of your life. And to live is actually to live in problems. So he goes back to the polish the tile koan. So which do you hit, the cart or the horse? Which do you hit, yourself or your problems? If you start questioning which you should hit, that means you've already started to wander about. But when you actually hit the horse, the cart will go. In truth, the cart and the horse are not different. When you are you, there is no problem of whether you should hit the cart or the horse. When you are you, Zazen becomes true Zazen. So when you practice Zazen, your problem will practice Zazen, and everything else will practice Zazen too. Even though your spouse is in bed, he or she is also practicing Zazen when you practice Zazen. But when you do not practice true Zazen, then there is your spouse, then there is yourself, each quite different, quite separate from the other. So if you yourself have true practice, then everything else is practicing our way at the same time. And he connects this koan then to the second koan we talked about, addressing ourselves. This is why we should always address ourselves, checking up on ourselves like a doctor tapping himself. This is very important. This kind of practice should be continued moment after moment, incessantly. We say, when the night is here, the dawn comes. It means there is no gap between the dawn and the night. Before the summer is over, autumn comes. In this way, we should understand our life. We should practice with this understanding and solve our problems in this way. Actually, just to work on the problem, if you do it with single-minded effort, is enough. You should just polish the tile. That is our practice. The purpose of practice is not to make a tile a jewel. Just continue sitting. That is practice in its truest sense. It is not a matter of whether or not it is possible to attain Buddhahood, whether or not it is possible to make a tile a jewel. Just to work and live in this world with this understanding is the most important point. That is our practice. That is true Zazen. So, and now it comes back around again, as these things often do, to goalless practice. I think this is a really nice, succinct way of talking about something that we talk about a lot, but it's intellectually easy to understand, but hard to think about and practice because we all sit and we're like, okay, we're sitting for XYZ, or we're sitting because we want to be better husbands or wives or partners or people, or we want to be more focused, or we want to be not as mean or calmer or suffer less. We want to suffer less. Like at the end of the day, that's what Buddhism is about, suffering less. And so sitting down with a sort of goal, whether we admit it or not, but then having to sit in goalless practice is I think a conundrum that we face. But I think this idea that Basso, the loud Basso, was sitting and very clearly saying, I'm sitting because I'm practiced very loudly, very intensely, I'm doing Zazen right now, clearly. But he wanted to attain enlightenment. I want to be a Buddha. A very understandable, relatable thing to want that I think in other practices of Buddhism, more or less, I mean, I think it's actually not talked about in most practices of Buddhism. It's rude to talk about, but especially in Zen, is not something we have this goalless practice. It's not something we talk about. And the teacher wanted to teach him a lesson, wanted to show him that what he was doing was off the mark and started to polish a tile. And so it's not about making a tile a jewel. It's about polishing the tile. And there's another thing that is in Buddhism, that's this sense of the impossible. And the Bodhisattva vow encapsulates this series of vow to do impossible things. And the last being, Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Like the series of vowing to do these things that you know are unattainable, this pursuit of the impossible, and this making a tile into a jewel, I don't think it's like controversial, but I don't think in and of itself is necessarily a bad thing unless you just keep polishing the tile. Wanting it, and it's tricky because language, but wanting it to become a jewel, I think vowing to do this impossible thing, sitting to do this impossible thing to become Buddha, in and of itself is not the thing that I think is possibly wrong here. And I could be wrong, but I think this idea of stopping the polishing when it doesn't become a jewel, stopping sitting when you don't attain enlightenment, when you don't become a Buddha, I think that's the problem or a problem with goal-oriented practice is you fail and you're setting yourself up again to fail something, just like, you know, you have these problems in your life that you can't solve. It's another problem to solve, right? As opposed to being the problem, as opposed to letting the sitting just be part of your life, as opposed to this problem that you have to solve. And when you don't solve, you're going to get frustrated with and feel like this thing is apart from you and different than you. I mean, that's just one interpretation. So he ends with, or at least I end with, this is excerpted. When you are you, you see things as they are, and you become one with your surroundings. There is your true self. There you have true practice. You have the practice of a frog. When you understand a frog through and through, you attain enlightenment. You are a Buddha. And you are good for others too, husband or wife or son or daughter. This is Zazen. So I really love that he comes back to, yet again, the husband, the wife, the son or daughter, the person, the being, the roommate, the coworker, the stranger who we think we're separate from, who we think they don't do Zazen and I do Zazen. The problem in our lives that we think we're separate from, this being that isn't doing Zazen when we're being so diligent and practicing Zazen. Those people, you must have heard the music outside as you were sitting. That's, according to Shunryu Suzuki, they're doing Zazen as we're doing Zazen. Whoever's banging, constructing, whatever, when we're sitting, they're doing Zazen when we're doing Zazen. There's no separation from our Zazen and their banging music Zazen, which is a really, really, really beautiful thing. And maybe if we can take this away from this chapter of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, away from this Dharma talk and into our lives, this idea that there's no separation between us and that person, the interdependence, another Buddhist thing. There's so many Buddhist messages, Buddhist points in this one chapter. The interdependence of us and this husband or wife or son or daughter or music listener or hammerer, then maybe we can be good for others too. Sonju Suzuki says that this is Zazen, not just being a frog, not just being good for ourselves, but being good for others too. That's the talk. We would love to open it up. Why did I say we? The royal we. Queen. Forget all that.
Queen Emily.
Forget all that, like, impermanent self stuff. I'm a queen. Queen Emily would like to open this up to comment.
Thank you, first of all, for painting a great picture of what Basso would sound like. That was amazing. Really helped to sell it.
I don't think he was that popular at the monastery.
Well, he was trying. Personally, my partner doesn't practice Zazen, so it's always great to remember that it's a pretty common problem to have. Sometimes I didn't do Zazen early in the morning when everything's quiet and now like TV's on and I'm like just trying to like try my hardest to just sit and ignore what's going on behind me and just try to focus on the Zazen. And there's a bit of that sense of superiority of, oh, this is going to make me a really good Zazen person. There's like TV's going on and there's all these distractions and this is going to be like awesome for my practice. But it's good to remember that it's also nothing special and it's part of life. And
yeah,
that sense of superiority from Zazen is like easy to sit on. It's just a feeling of, oh, this is my Zazen and this is my thing that I'm going to just focus deep into and ignore everything else. But that's not the fullness of the practice. And then one other thing regarding the way that the self is talked about here, the fact that we're not separate from our problems, that like you said, like, we're usually thinking of, I'm here and my problem's there and I have to like push through it. But like, if I wasn't around, that problem wouldn't be around really. It would just be a thing in the world.
Yeah.
And like, sometimes the problems are other people too, which like, that's where I get so confused. Is it like, am I saying that we're all the same person? Or is it like, I'm me, you're you kind of thing? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I guess, and maybe this is a cop-out answer because it's cheating, but I think, why not both? And that's the Zen answer, yeah. I think, is we're both separate and not separate. Of course. I mean, that's something that, right. I mean, I don't even know if it's a Zen answer, but it's something I've heard at the Sangha since I've been practicing forever. Just like that, of course, there's a self. If I touch this, my hand doesn't go through it, right? That's me, right? Even though deep scientifically we know my hand is a bunch of molecules and there's no skin here and there's no solidity here, really. It's just molecules interacting with other molecules. So in a sense, also, I am not a full solid self. And yeah, we're problems are other people and we're both the same as them. And we have, I think interdependence actually is that, I mean, that's a whole nother Dharma talk. And if anyone has any light to shed on that as well, but like, it's not saying necessarily same, like it's saying interdependent, it's saying dependent. It's saying, I think it's in a way you could say same, but I think there's overlap. There's a Venn diagram of sameness, I think, when I think about interdependence. And I think the Zen answer is always D, all of the above. And that's why Dogen constantly contradicts himself and says one thing and then says the exact opposite thing in the next line. I think he's trying to get at something that's trying to crack our very human desire to want things to be one thing, to want to have one answer to something. At least that's what I think in answer to your question.
So the frog thing, and I know that, I mean, I guess there's other koans that use other animals as examples of like perfect Zazen. The one thing I wonder about that is the like formal side to it that we do. Yeah, the frog is sitting and he looks, or she looks to be perfectly still and sitting and everything, but the frog can't do a cosmic mudra. They're not bowing. They're not like a part of a sangha. Like, Where does all that come in?
I think that's an interesting question. Yeah. I want to answer you in such a pretentious way that, like, I shouldn't even be using. I haven't earned the right to answer you in this sort of pretentious way. But, like, I guess what came up for me and you said is don't confuse the stick pointing at the moon for the moon.
Great answer. I'll take it. Thank you.
Sorry for the pretentiousness.
Thank you for your talk. I thought when you brought up this idea of the cart and the horse, what immediately came to mind to me when sitting in Zazen and your mind, the mind starts to drift, having this thought of where is this horse taking me, or having a sense of like, what is this thing that is drawing me out of myself, in a sense. That's what I thought of when you first mentioned the cart and the horse. It's like that question of what is me and what is not me? Where are these thoughts coming from? What is this thing that draws me? Because there's a feeling of having this split in that moment. But then I love how when you start to question that, what is the cart and what is the horse? That itself is when your mind is wandering. It's so simple. It's just like, oh, you're the same. You just hit the horse. And that's the calling out, Brock. Yes, Brock, that constant calling back to yourself, and that self is impermanent because it's always something that has to be reaffirmed and reconnected to, I suppose.
I think you answered your own question because you were saying, oh, what is me? You feel like your thoughts are pulling yourself away from you. So what is me? Are your thoughts you? And then you talked about the horse and the cart being like, the same. I think Buddhism would say your thoughts are you. And this actual asking the question, you said, asking the question, which is the cart or the horse, and Suzuki said, is wrong. So you asking the question, which what is me, is wrong, is actually the thing that's pulling yourself away from yourself. It's easier said than done, right? But if we were all able to look at our thoughts and recognize our thoughts, and I think it's going to be the both again, right? As both ourselves and not ourselves. But that part that you're resenting, that you're like, this is taking me away from the moment, this is taking, and I totally get that. That part is the part that's taking away from the moment. The part that you don't see or recognize your thoughts as yourself. Maybe if you recognized your thoughts as yourself, it'd be like, okay, these thoughts are coming and going in my impermanent self, and these arise and pass, and they're nothing to worry about because they're constantly blinking into existence and blinking out of existence. And so we wouldn't follow them down that path. We'd recognize these thoughts as part of our impermanent self. And it wouldn't be something that takes us away from ourselves. It'd be something and be like, oh, this is a part of ourself, and we wouldn't feel separate from them.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
No, that makes sense. Yeah. I think that's also like, seeing, I don't know, this idea of that even the frog sometimes loses themselves and is always addressing themselves.
Yes. Yes. And Dzogchen, I think Dzogchen's a Zen master. Dzogchen has to constantly address himself. Shinzuki talks about this being an incessant practice, a practice you have to do moment to moment. I don't think this is talking about a situation where you get to a point where you stop losing yourself. I think it's a constant practice of addressing yourself. I like that he keeps talking about the frog just having natural reactions in the moment. If something annoys him, he'll make a face. If something comes along to eat, he'll snap it up and eat. It's not about being the frog and being some being who like doesn't need to eat when they're hungry, or I'm above that, or doesn't get annoyed by something that comes along that's annoying. It's about this naturalness, this reacting to everything in the moment that isn't, and recognizing that's both separate from you and also not separate from you. But again, easier said than done. It's a, I can say all these things to you guys and read this chapter, but when it comes to me being the frog and dealing with a problem and recognizing, you know, it's like a whole nother lifetime, literal lifetime of practice.
Thank you.
But that goes for way more Zen masters than you might imagine, what you just said. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm glad they said it. Loved your hot take on the tile koan. I've heard a lot of interpretation of that one, and I haven't heard it quite said like that, but I think it was a really nice one. It made me think of sanding wood, actually, because I've done it a few times where I just get in like a mood and have a piece of wood and just like start sanding. Like, you can sculpt, but it just takes a very long time.
Yeah.
Like, I turn like a thing into like a knife, and then by the end, if you get on like the 3,000 grit sandpapers, you all of them through, you can make wood shine. I didn't know you could make wood like soft and firm and shiny. And I like it something like futility, just like just rubbing wood over and over again until it actually becomes shiny and glowy, almost like a mirror. Mm. That shouldn't be possible. And yet, not to argue with the koan, but made me think of that. Anyway, my actual question, which is personal towards me, when we did the call your name thing, call my name, and then like the, you know, the you are the problem was what was stuck in my head. So that was like the next thing that I heard. And for me, as soon as I say, Dave, you are the problem, the first thing that happens is I just relax and I get kind of happy. Yeah, it's like I've been fighting the idea that I'm the problem so much for so long and trying not to be the problem so much, or maybe even not to be perceived as the problem. Just like saying it, it's like, oh, thank God. I can just admit it and relax. And my very personal question is, am I just very cynical and jaded, or is there something more universal about practice in there? I don't know if you can answer that, but...
I mean, you are cynical and jaded. I think we want to be separate from our problems, again, because there's some idealized world where we think that we can, like, exist where we don't have any problems. And so we desperately want to, like, separate our problems from ourselves, separate our stresses from ourselves. And it's also really weird, not to go on a tangent, that we're talking about this being the problem, you're the problem, in sort of a practice that's centered around not suffering. But we're talking about being the problem, we're talking about suffering. And maybe suffering is the window, accepting suffering is a window into not suffering. Makes sense. But I think I understand what you're saying by that. And I want that too. I want that lightness of like being able to accept that I'm the problem and being free from all of the machinations and rationalizations and somersaults I do to try to prove that my problems are separate from myself. I don't think in this sense you are the problem. Sonya Suzuki saying, you're saying, I don't think is about blame or guilt. It's about recognizing that these things you think they're outside of yourself, these things that you think that you just want to be rid of are part of your life. I just love the line because it feels so like radical in a world where there's don't sweat the small stuff. And like, you know, all this, so much money and so many like industries built on getting to a calmer place, and Zen and mindfulness specifically, like parts of Buddhism or stripped from Buddhism, are like geared towards that too. And I don't begrudge anyone that. And a lot of reasons why people are here sitting is because of that. But like, just to live is actually to live in problems is a really nice way and accessible way of saying the first noble truth, is saying life is suffering. So I feel like you saying you are the problem is just saying like life is suffering. And of course you feel good when you say that, because the first noble truth is great. It's a path to being free from suffering. There's something free in just, and anyway.
The first step to recovery is when you have a problem.
Yes, exactly.
We have a problem called a samsara.
Yes, exactly. So it's nice to just be free from trying to believe that we're not going to have any problems anymore at some point. If we just say the perfect thing or are the perfect weight or look the perfect way or have the perfect partner or the perfect job or whatever, like, then we'll be free from problems. If we could travel back in time and not make that decision that we made or whatever, say that thing that we said or whatever it is, that we would have a world without problems. To live is to actually live in problems.
There's a money basket there. Thank you for everything you do to help support us. We rely completely on your donations. Basket there, link online. Becoming recurring members, best way to help us. We recommend 10 to 15 per sit. Otherwise, if you cannot afford to donate, please do not. But if you can, please do. It's a team effort. We all do what we can.